Hey, my name's Xenu, and you're listening to Anti-Moonboy News. We got a good one for you today, folks. We're going to be breaking down the Xano de-anonymization attack and what it means for the future of Xano. We'll also be taking a look at the news of the past week. For example, the Genius Act has passed while everyone's distracted by World War III or something. Yeah, it's a good one, so stick around for that. Robot, you excited for today's show?
Beboo, I have put all of my money into Xano. Beboo.
Robot, you don't have any money. Did you break into my bank account again?
Beboo, we are going to the moon. Beboo.
Gonna have to call the bank later. Alright, let's get to the super chats. xmrchat.com/Xenu. If you would like to send a super chat, we begin every episode of Anti-Moonboy News with super chats. And I got three this week. The first one is from XMR Family. They donate 0.01 XMR. And they ask, cats or dogs? Yeah, I mean, this is the age-old question. But for me, it's definitely going to be cats. Don't get me wrong. I like dogs. But cats, for me, really mesh well with my personality. I do have a cat, and he's my best friend. He's funny because he will strategically, like if there's a room full of people, he will strategically place himself to guarantee that he will get the most amount of pets possible. Like he'll just put himself right in the middle just to get attention. And he loves belly rubs. And I don't think he's ever scratched anybody in his life. Like, he's just the nicest guy. But, like, yeah, it's funny because, like, cats can have just, like, dramatically different personalities. For example, my family, they got this weirdo cat that's, like, the first, like, year that I knew him, okay? Every time I'd walk into a room that he'd be in, he'd just, like, run out. Like, he wanted nothing to do with me, was, like, terrified of me. And then what started happening is, like, I'd be, like, watching TV at my parents', but I'd be alone. And then he'd, like, come up to me and, like, brush up against me, right? But the second my parents would, like, walk in the general area, he'd run away. As if to say, he didn't want to be seen with me. Like, he did that for, like, a long time. And actually, only recently, he's, like, now, like, totally cool with, like, hanging out with me. Yeah, I don't know, man. Cats are fun. So anyway, that would be my answer to that question. Thank you for that donation. Next up, we got Boris, and he gives a big donation, 0.1337 XMR. Thank you very much, Boris. And he says, really love your content. Great job on the manifesto. Appreciate that, Boris. And, you know, it's funny. When I see the name Boris, right? I know a lot of people think of like some Eastern European person or Boris Yeltsin, right? But for me, whenever I see Boris, I think of the band from Japan. I don't know if you guys are into Boris at all. They rip. So I'm actually going to play, in honor of you, Boris, I'm going to play Pink by Boris. Well, I'm only going to play the first minute, but the song is really good. And yeah, if you don't like this, you don't have taste. I don't know what to say. So here we go. Yeah, that band rips. I saw them once. So young Xenu, by the way, was a bit of a rabble rouser. I'm in mosh pit retirement now. Okay, to be very clear, but back then I was always like in the mosh pit. And yeah, I saw Boris once, and they're great live. I remember they played this song, so I was like going hard. And I'll never forget because there was this guy in the mosh pit, in the dead center of the mosh pit, and he had to be like 6'6", like 300 pounds. The guy was a mountain. And so I just looked at him and I took a run at him. And I collided with him and ate total shit. I had absolutely no effect on him. And I remember I scraped my knees really badly. And he picked me up and he's just like, and I gave him like a fist bump. It was fun. the good old days, man. But yeah, that song rips. But yeah, Boris is really good. Check out, yeah, Pink is a really good album. And the other one where the guy's sitting with his double guitar and he's sitting down on the stool. You'll know what I mean if you see the artwork. So that one's really good too. So anyway, yeah, Boris, check him out. All right, and lastly, we have Sheldon. He donates 0.02 XMR. And he says, I like that you want to make more Attack of the Poison Output videos. Also, if you made a concise video series about the what and why of setting up an XMR wallet for complete beginners, that is something I would use to onboard beginners. Well, thank you very much for the donation, Sheldon, and your input there. I appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, Attack of the Poison Output's definitely coming back. In fact, I actually left off at the section about network security, which is like the hot topic now, especially with Xano and that de-anonymization attack. So yeah, we definitely will be coming back, probably starting next month. I have like 5 to 10 more episodes left to make for that, which I do want to get around to doing. That series, very proud of it. I think it's going to age like a fine wine, because I think everyone's starting to catch on to the fact that these chain analysis companies, they're not really attacking cryptocurrencies on the blockchain necessarily. They're attacking them through metadata, especially from KYC exchanges. It's so funny because you'll like go online and see people debating about like, well, my cryptocurrency is more private than your cryptocurrency. And it's just like half the stuff you're talking about doesn't really even matter. You know, they're like using KYC metadata half the time, actually pretty much all the time. So, yeah, it's a great series, especially if you want to learn about Monero. And I also talk a lot about how ring signatures just aren't that good. And we really break it down in a slow way, but it's also more for like intermediate kind of Monero users. So I'm very proud of it. But yeah, what you bring up, though, is my future idea where I want to make a series about Monero for like complete beginners. I know I do have a lot of listeners who are more on the beginner side, which is totally fine, by the way. I'm not saying you guys are idiots at all. I'm really happy that people want to learn more about Monero. And so, yeah, I will be making a beginner series. And that will be probably in the fall. I'll start dropping that. And my idea actually is to make a Monero CCS proposal. And I don't know how much I'm going to ask for, but basically, the CCS is the community crowdsource fund, and I'm going to make that. And yeah, I mean, I've put out so much good content, like I'm sure people will support it. And I don't know how many videos I'm going to make for the series. I'm going to have to sit down and think about it. But like, to your point, like the first episode is probably going to be how to download a wallet. Like literally, we're going to walk through. Go to getmonero.org and I'll show you how to download on Linux and on Windows. We'll walk through what a wallet is, what you can do with your wallet, how to run a node, you know, how to mine Monero, right? Like, what even is mining? You know, we're going to like really take it one step at a time. And I think I can get at least 30 videos of content, probably more. I want to just have like a really all-encompassing series that people can point to like really learn about Monero. And then if you want to like advance your OPSEC, you can then check out Attack of the Poison Output. So it's a nice compliment, I think. So that's the idea at least. But I haven't really thought too much about that. So MoneroCon happened this week, and I have not actually listened to like any of the presentations. And I'm actually kind of annoyed because they took the presentations down. So hopefully they put those back up like sooner than later, because the idea is once they do put them back up, I will be doing like a recap of all the presentations. So yeah, once they put those back up, I'll have like one anti-Moon Boy news episode will be on day one. And then the following week I'll do day two, and the following week I'll do day three. So we'll go through the entire week and I'll give a summary of what they were talking about and, you know, kind of explain it to you guys so everyone can kind of understand the latest that's going on in this cutting edge technology. So yeah, it's going to be a really good time. I'm really looking forward to it because I really just haven't, you know, really listened to any of them. Now, regarding the presentations I did, both those will be uploaded on my channel. And I narrated two presentations for Ruckneum. The first presentation was on OSPEED, which we've talked about on this channel a lot. OSPEED was the research Ruckneum did regarding ring signatures and how their decoy selection algorithm can be attacked. Yeah, it's phenomenal research, and it's really, you know, proof of why we need to get full chain membership proofs. Because like it's not good news, right? So I'm really happy we did that and got that in a nice presentation, and I've heard great feedback on that too. So I'll get that on the channel. And the other presentation was on spy nodes, which is actually highly relevant with what we're about to talk about with Xano. Basically, if you weren't aware, for the past year, there have been spy nodes that apparently have been attacking Dandelion++. Over 1,000 of them, actually. And researchers discovered this. It was actually Bug900, who was the co-writer of this presentation along with Ruckneum. Bug900, he is developing Cuprate, which is a new node being written for Rust. It's a new Monero node that a lot of people are raving about. And basically, this node is just a lot faster than the current Monero rod that we have if you download a node. But anyways, he was working on this, and he noticed that there's like these nodes that were behaving weird, okay? And so he said that he was able to figure out that they're spy nodes, but he didn't disclose why. And so anyways, all the researchers were working on what to do with it, and they came up with a solution. And what's really cool about this presentation is the methodology as to how they were able to figure out they were spy nodes is actually shown in this presentation. So like I was sent this PowerPoint basically and a script for it, and it included information that hadn't even been released to the public yet. So I was like, well, this is pretty cool, right? And then, you know, they did disclose it actually that week in the Monero Research Lab. Now, as to how they were able to figure out the spy nodes, it's explained in the presentation, but basically there was metadata that they saw during the process of pinging a node. They noticed that the spy nodes would have a different identifier to what they would be responding to the ping with. So they would basically like relay the ping to a good node to kind of like obscure themselves. It's explained in much better detail in the presentation, but I will be having that on my channel. So keep an eye out for that. Now it's a good segue here though, because the Xano de-anonymization attack happened this week, or at least the disclosure of this vulnerability. And I want to lead off though with the contrast between this presentation that I did for Ruckneum and Bug900 versus the Xano team's response to this de-anonymization attack from spy nodes. It's weirdly relevant, I know. It's like just phenomenal timing, to be completely honest. Was not planned. And no, I'm not the person behind the Xano attack. I got a couple messages asking if I was behind it. No, it's not me. I am reporting on it, though, but was not me. But the thing I want to point out, though, is like nothing's perfect, right? Monero gets attacked all the time. Like all the time. Right now, there's like a miner trying to attack it. We got spy nodes here. We have Chainalysis, you know, trying to trace transactions. It's all the time Monero's being attacked, right? This is nothing new. But like, there's a right way of responding to attack and a wrong way. And if you watch this presentation that I narrate for MoneroCon, they figured out that there were spy nodes. What did they do? They went to work. you know, they saw the problem, they researched it, and they came up with multiple different things that they could do to solve the problem. And they weighed the pros and cons of each one, and they really took their time with it. And what you're going to see with Xano is they are instead just downplaying this issue. And the mitigations that they're offering are just not good. It's very lazy work, in my opinion, what they're doing. And that contrast is just really the contrast between a project like Monero and a project like Xano. You know, to me, it's kind of like Monero is in the major leagues, right? And Xano is like some softball beer league team. Like, that's, in my opinion, the contrast between how the research is going over in Monero versus Xano. It's a completely different world. I mean, the contrast is just glaring, really. Because, you know, with Xano, they really are just hand-waving away a lot of this. But we're going to break this down in a lot more detail. I don't want to get ahead of myself. But the timing of this presentation with this de-anonymization leak is just... It's eye-opening, to say the least. So basically, with this whole Xano thing, I was at work in the shop. Sweating my balls off, by the way. It gets hot in there. And yeah, I was taking a break, took my phone out, and saw that Dero had a de-anonymization attack that was apparently about to be leaked. And so I'm like, oh, well, that's going to be interesting. And then I saw someone posted an Onion link in the Monero IRC. So then I bookmarked that. I was like, okay, when I get home, I'll check that out. It was only until later I realized that the Onion link that was posted in the IRC was not about Dero, but it was about Xano. So there was actually, within the span of an hour, two disclosures, or at least two data de-anonymization announcements that had been made in the span of like an hour, one attacking Dero and one attacking Xano. Now, as far as I know, up until this point, the Dero one has not been released to the public, at least as at the point of me making this episode. But I only figured out later that, like, when I got home and put the Onion link in, it was about Xano. And I'm like, oh, shit, this is not what I was expecting. So it's kind of funny it happened at the same time. I don't know if that happened to anybody else, but that's actually what happened with me. But yeah, I opened the link and I was immediately like pretty impressed with the work being done. Now, this is being done by this guy who goes by the name Jay Hendrix. I'm assuming he's a fan of Jimi Hendrix. Not really sure. And he's calling this the Zaldo Rich List. And basically what they're doing, to kind of give a broad overview of this attack, is that they figured out that Xano has absolutely no privacy on the network level. Basically none. And what they figured out is that anybody sending Xano from their own personal node is totally traced. Which is backwards, right? Like, When you tell people to run your own node, it's like you're supposed to have better privacy. In the case with Xano, this attack basically shows that it's the opposite. If you run your own node in Xano and send Xano, somebody will be able to trivially link your transaction to your own node and get the IP address from it. That's a problem, okay? That's a really big problem. The second thing, and I didn't even realize this because I just have never paid attention to Xano. Apparently, they don't even have Tor or I2P support. So everything is just on the clearnet with Xano. So there's no way to avoid this attack if you're using Xano on the network, on the clearnet, which, well, you have to use Xano on the clearnet. There's no other way. So that's really troubling. And so the thing is, if you are able to identify an IP address with a transaction, you can use things like timing analysis to really, you know, trace a transaction. So this isn't like breaking the cryptography of Xano, but it's a massive metadata leak. And this is the type of metadata leak which can basically trace a transaction. For example, Let's say somebody withdraws Xano from a KYC exchange. They withdraw it, put it in their own account or their own wallet. Then they send that Xano to somebody who's actually working with the KYC exchange. So this is like an EAE attack, right? The problem here is, one, if this is all, if there's a, like a lot of collusion happening, right? Which we're going to just, this is a hypothetical, but let's say there's collusion with the exchange, the person you're sending Xano to who's working with the exchange, and they're using chain analytics, right? If you accept that Xano from the exchange and then send that Xano to this person who is spying on you, you can actually trace that. Maybe not directly, but you can draw a correlation between the receiving of the Xano from the KYC exchange and the sending of Xano, because your IP address that you use to access that KYC exchange will match the IP address that you use to send that Xano. Now, of course, you can get around this, like, for example, using a VPN or using a centralized node, which we're going to talk about in a sec. But this is still a major vulnerability. And this is kind of the issue with Xano, where they haven't really made this clear to their users, I don't think. And the thing is, because Xano doesn't have Dandelion++, there's no protection against this. So the group behind this attack is called the Haze Project. To date, they have two different reports that they have posted. One back in April, called MaldoMap. And then this recent one, which was released this week, called Zaldo Rich List. Now, MaldoMap was actually covering Monero for the most part. And in a similar vein, this is all about network security. So essentially what they did is they observed Monero and tried to make sense of how its network security worked. And once you know it, they also came to the conclusion that there were a lot of spy nodes observing Monero's network. In actual fact, the individual who's behind this investigation for Xano, Jay Hendricks, he was actually very involved in the Monero Research Lab and their work with the spy nodes that has happened recently. So right off the bat, like, you see a huge difference between how Xano operates and how Monero is operating. Where you have this guy who, I don't know who Jay Hendricks is. I don't know where he's really come from. Maybe he's been a longtime member of Monero. Maybe he's new. But he comes in with some information or some ideas. And instead of, you know, downplaying this, you know, reality and saying, well, it's just a peer-to-peer network, this is how it works, you know, with Monero, they're actively trying to figure out solutions, right? Whereas with Xano, as we're going to read their mitigations later and how they're approaching this, they're not really doing anything. This is a huge contrast. And it's why it's so funny that I did this presentation at MoneroCon, you know, just this week, right? So anyways, in that initial report, they came to a similar conclusion where it's very plausible that Dandelion++ is being attacked. And that a lot of these nodes that are, you know, in the network are spy nodes. And their summary for the Monero research is very similar to the, you know, advice that I've been giving for Monero. It's actually exactly the same, where for the best network security, send your transactions over Tor or I2P. Very simple to set up a node like that. And, you know, in doing so, you're in the weeds. You're basically fine. Furthermore, they really emphasize how optional privacy doesn't work, and we need to have more fleshed out base layer privacy. Their conclusion about Dandelion++ is that it works, although if you have a lot of spy nodes, it can still be attacked, which is true. And one thing that they picked out was that average users who use Monero are connected to at least two spy nodes out of 12 peers. And this is especially notable if you are not using the ban list. I've mentioned this before on Attack of the Poison Outputs as well as this podcast. You want to be running that ban list if you're running a node. You can look that up. But the ban list will essentially block all of those spy nodes automatically. So let's back up and maybe explain things a little more simply, okay? When you use Monero, there's really one of two things you can do. You can either run a node or you can connect to a remote node. And the thing is, most people are just connecting to remote nodes. And this is kind of just obvious. What we're looking at with this Xano thing is people who are running their own nodes. Because when you run your own node, your IP address is visible. So of course, when you send a transaction, it is broadcast from your IP address, right? But there's a key difference. With Monero and Dandelion++, it is very difficult to tell where a transaction originates from. And to be honest with you, I can't really describe this in podcast form. I will post a link to a animated video I made about Dandelion++. So I'll put that down below. But essentially, if you don't have Dandelion++, it is actually quite trivial to see where a transaction originated from, especially if you have a lot of spy nodes. So the problem here is that Xano does not have Dandelion++. So when you send a transaction, when you're running your own node in Xano, it is actually very easy to tell that that IP address is associated with that transaction, which is really bad, because essentially you can correlate all transactions with those IP addresses. Meaning, if you run your own node, you're actually just totally exposed, which is really problematic. There are mitigations for this, but these mitigations rely on third parties, which is obviously not ideal and not good. So reading off the Zaldo Richlist report published by the Haze Project, it says, quote, when there is no IP obfuscation and when there are enough spy nodes to be picked up at least once in the peer list, everything falls apart. We can determine the user's IP address by comparing all spy node relay information and by filtering for the earliest timestamp. By doing so, they can identify the source with 100% success rate. So then they post a table and they kind of give some examples showing that this is actually quite easy to do. Moving on, an average user actually gets more privacy while using a centralized mobile Lite wallet than an actual full node. Think of Lite wallets as if someone were sending a transaction on your behalf. A Lite wallet operator would know your IP address instead of a network spy. So essentially, you're relying on this Lite wallet operator to not record your IP address. But this is actually one of the ways around this attack, is by using one of their services. And yes, this is one of the mitigations that Xano proposes. The report goes on, quote, by filtering transactions, we can determine whether a transaction was sent by the Xano mobile wallet, any other mobile Lite wallet, a centralized exchange, or the actual user. For any transaction sent via a full node since the first days of June, we can identify the actual user's IP address. But what about those who use a VPN? Any VPN provider can log the client's IP address. Some people even choose to pay for it with fiat, which makes things even worse, linking their full legal names. And from a previous report, we learned that at most 2% of users choose connections over a VPN. So this is the second, you know, mitigation offered by Xano, use a VPN. Well, most people are not using VPNs when they're using one of these services. It's just not a realistic thing that people are going to be doing. So they have a chart showing the percentage of transactions and where they're sent. And apparently 77.6% of all transactions are generated by three servers. And one of those servers is controlled by the team for their mobile wallet. And it's theorized that the other two are likely operated by centralized exchanges. The other 26% belong to hosting companies, which can theoretically be set up as self-hosted VPN solutions by servers, but we believe that most of them belong to smaller centralized exchanges. And only 5% of these transactions are actually people sending it. So this is like a real irony here, because people who are doing this the right way, right? People who are like running your own node, that's what you're told to do, right? They're actually the ones that end up getting hurt the most, right? That's what this report says, word for word, basically. Of course, the alternative here is that you have to use one of these services, right? Like a centralized exchange or the mobile wallet. And they could just be recording your data. So your two options really are have your data, harvested by this server that you're using, or run your own node and have your data harvested by a spy node. You don't win in either situation. The thing is, like, you have to assume that all of these exchanges are holding your data. So, you know, based off the theory here that these servers that are shown here are probably like exchanges, that means that like they're 100% saving your data and sharing that with law enforcement. So then really the last chunk here is the Zano mobile wallet, which has like 44% of total transactions. Are they not going to share information with law enforcement if asked? You know what I mean? You have to trust them to do that. I don't know if I trust them, right? Because they're doxxed, right? Why would they not share that data if they're a company, right? You have to trust them. And that's the whole thing of like, well, I'd rather run my own node. But if you run your own node, then a spy node can get your information. So it's like, there's nothing you can really do here. And so basically they show different users that they have here. They have like a list of different users. They don't show their IP address. They're not leaking that information, but they are saying whether or not their IP address was leaked and their estimated balance of Zano that they have based on their block rewards that they're receiving, which is pretty damning. They also found out that it's highly likely that TradeOgre is staking the funds of people who are holding their Zano on their exchange because they were able to link their IP address to one of the staker's nodes, basically. So they were actually able to dox a TradeOgre staking wallet. TradeOgre has not responded, as far as I know, to this accusation, but this is like proving that exchanges are, you know, just holding onto your coins and using it for their own personal gain. Moving on, apparently you can also link IP addresses to aliases. A feature of Zano is you can have an alias connected to your wallet. So I guess if you do that and your IP address is exposed, it'll just link to your alias, which, you know, makes a lot of sense. So they have some recommended solutions for this at the end here. One, add Dandelion +++. We've already talked about this, but this is just a no-brainer, really. It works. We know it works. It's not perfect, but yeah. They can also implement ASN division, autonomous system numbers, basically to get rid of the fact that you don't want all of your peers coming from a single ISP. So because as was found with the Monero spy nodes, a lot of them were coming from the same internet service provider. So if you just cut that down and only accept one peer from each ISP, it drastically reduces the chances you're going to connect to a spy node. They also recommend increasing the number of default outgoing connections from 8 to 32 or higher, and maybe blocking the IP addresses that are found to be spy nodes by default, which is much more difficult, but that is a centralized solution. Furthermore, adding Tor and I2P support. I mean, this is a no-brainer, right? Adding support for these anonymous networks, well, that'll help anonymity in general, right? So the Zano response to this, again, was kind of just acknowledging it, but not really, like, offering any solutions. There are key points. One, this is a standard P2P functionality, not an exploit, they say. The ability to see peer connections is inherent to how peer-to-peer networks operate. And the second thing they say is the report conflates network-level privacy data with a privacy breach. Seeing IP addresses of nodes doesn't break Zano's cryptographic privacy guarantees. I mean, the problem with that is, how is this not a privacy breach, right? If your IP address is connected to a transaction, that's a significant privacy breach. Yes, it's network data, but like, that's just another, you know, battlefield, right? So what they're saying is like, well, the cryptographic privacy is fine. That doesn't matter. Right, because if the network level privacy is trash, then that just ruins everything anyways, right? And this is the issue here. So they're defensive configuration options. And I've already kind of gone over this, but the first thing they say is to restrict your peers to only a personal subset of exit nodes or nodes operated by trusted parties or Xano team maintained infrastructure nodes. Translation, only use centralized nodes is what really what they're saying. And that's ridiculous, right? If you're running a node, you want it to be decentralized. You want to have it so that anybody can, you know, use your node to help sync to the chain. And so you can help the information spread and so on and so forth. This is why we are into decentralized peer-to-peer cryptocurrency. That decentralization is really important. This is arguing that you should centralize things. You know, it says that this approach, quote, prevents random nodes from connecting directly to yours. But like, I would want random nodes connecting to me, right? Because I want to help people who are, you know, getting into Xano, right? Their second suggestion is to use a VPN. But again, you're just trusting a VPN. And VPNs, just to be clear, they're good like in a pinch or like if you want to like avoid like a geo block. But to use a VPN for like strictly like very private things is not a good idea. Because really a VPN, it's just another company you're trusting to hold on to your data. And a lot of times VPNs are just honeypots. So this is like the main solution that they're offering here. And I mean, that's just not that promising, right? Because like this is something where you're putting trust into a different company, a company that Xano doesn't even control, by the way. So at least in the other option, it's Xano themselves. So if you trust Xano, but in this case, it's just a quote unquote VPN. You know, what VPN, you know, how are you going to buy this VPN? You know, they don't go into details on that because they can't really, right? So yeah, this is just not good. I like flat out, this is just not a good answer. Now, the next thing they say is that, this is normal peer-to-peer network activity, which is true, it is. But then they criticize the solutions that are being suggested to them. You know, the first thing they say is they chose not to implement Dandelion++ because it doesn't provide effective protections against spy nodes. And I think that's ridiculous. And in actual fact, Chainalysis has even said this. Remember those leaked slides that happened? Where there's that presentation, that person is speaking about Monero, they say, quote, "So this was a really big challenge for us because a lot of how we do our Monero tracing involves IP observations of things like services. Dandelion has made that impossible. The big thing to know is that Dandelion was implemented in October 2020, and so anything that occurred after that time, the IP observations that we collect are going to be much, much weaker. They're going to be much lower confidence." That's at 13 minutes and 32 seconds. I will post a link in the description. Hopefully I remember to do that. But yeah, they've pretty much flat out said like, yeah, Dandelion++ makes things a lot more difficult. So, I mean, I just completely disagree with them that Dandelion++ doesn't do anything. Now, this is at least a good start, right? The other thing they say is Tor and I2P integration. You know, you shouldn't just rely on that. And this is true. Like, you shouldn't just rely on that, but it should be available, right? You actually do need to have connections to the ClearNet because in case Tor or I2P goes down due to like a DDoS or something, you can at least still sync to the network and still send transactions, right? But to not even have anything with Tor or I2P, especially if you're a privacy project, is just unacceptable. There's really no two ways about it. The last thing I'm going to say here is they mention that Dandelion++ gives a false sense of security. And that is just outrageous. You could say that about any privacy tool, right? You could say Monero gives you a false sense of security. You could say PGP gives you a false sense of security. Tor gives you a false sense of security. It's meaningless, right? Any privacy tool can give you a false sense of security. Okay, this is just a cope from them. It's laziness. There's no reason not to add Dandelion++. If not, you should add something else. Because doing nothing is far worse. Because again, when you compare how Monero is dealing with this versus Xano, it's night and day. Right? It's the major leagues versus the softball beer league. One's actually doing something. They're approaching this and trying to improve. And the other is just saying, yeah, it's just a peer-to-peer network. Who do you trust with your privacy then in this case, right? Who do you trust with your net worth, your encrypted net worth? Who would you trust in this situation? It's ridiculous that this is even a comparison. you know, the reaction from the team was obviously bad. And of course, the reaction from the Zano, you know, holders is a reflection of that. A lot of these guys are in denial, yelling FUD, right? This fucking guy, Aaron Day, who every chance he gets, he shills Zano and about how important privacy is. He doesn't give a fuck about privacy. You know? What? Has he commented on this yet? Right? Absolute fraud. And like, these other guys, too, that hype up Zano. You know, your Jeff Berwicks and your crypto vigilantes. It's a real wonder why these guys never talk about these vulnerabilities that, you know, come out. You know, they just ignore it. It's not important, guys. We don't actually care about actual privacy vulnerabilities. We're just going to virtue signal and talk about how much we like privacy. You know, that's really what it is. It's fucking virtue signaling. That's what they're doing. They're talking about how much they love privacy, but they're not actually putting in the work. Absolute frauds. The only one, really, the only influencer who actually, like, nutted up and said, okay, this is bad, was Monero Mateo. Shout out to him. You know, he's the only one who's like, hey, guys, we should probably look into this. Because the rest of them, I don't know, man. Whew. Especially that Mr. Quibbs guy. Total idiot. I went to his Twitter page. This guy, Mr. Quibbs, he's like the marketing shill hired by Zano. And this guy has like a privacy Telegram group. And it's just like all these privacy coins. It's like, dude, you don't care about privacy. You're using privacy as a marketing gimmick. You know, I, as you guys know, I do not like Moon Boys. Okay? I'm not a fan of Moon Boys, if you weren't aware. You know what's worse than a Moon Boy, though? It's a Moon Boy who LARPs as a privacy advocate. Only thing worse. Because these people take something that is very important in this day and age, which is privacy, and they turn it into a marketing gimmick. So yeah. I don't think the story is over, by the way. I wouldn't be surprised if we see some future disclosures, and there's probably some more stuff that's going to come out. So, whatever, man. Okay, so for some other news, there's like a war going on now. It does suck sometimes being an American, being the bad guy. I can tell you right now, I don't know anybody who's happy about this that I know personally. Like, everyone's just like, what the fuck? It's very frustrating. Very, very frustrating. I have no idea how long this is going to go. Market's already reacting. And this might be a real, you know, test for the strength of cryptocurrency in the coming months because, things could get pretty grim for the economy if oil goes up because, like, everything hinges on that, right? So that's not good. Now let's get to some news, though, some crypto news or crypto-adjacent news. Pro-Israeli hackers hit Iran's NoBidEx exchange and burned $90 million in crypto. So basically, this group burned funds in a politically motivated cyber attack, and they claimed responsibility pretty quickly, promising to publish the company's source code and internal information stolen from the cyber attack. They actually, instead of keeping the money themselves, they sent it to vanity addresses like fuck IRG terrorists or IRGC terrorists, which is the Iranian Guard or Republican Guard Corps. All right. So, as mentioned earlier, Dero is also dealing with a potential de-anonymization disclosure. And the person who runs the Derolytics Twitter account apparently has created a Derolytics Explorer where you can, which has a comprehensive transaction filtering. They haven't launched it yet, but it will be launching soon, TM. So we'll be keeping an eye out for that. Possibly next week, we'll be covering Dero being attacked. All right. This is from the custodial Bitcoin Lightning Network wallet, Albi, has started confiscating user funds, labeling it as an inactivity fee. And yeah, people are posting their invoices and these custodial wallets, they're getting drained, in this case, for not using Lightning Network fast enough. Not your keys, not your coins. But yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised by this. These are custodial wallets and yeah, not your keys, not your coins. Moving on, a quick update on the Arctype Darknet Market admin that was captured last week. His name is allegedly Mark Hedgemeister, an amateur musician and computer scientist. And from the news article, it says, quote, cybersecurity experts speculate that one of these DDoS attacks, which the platform suffered in April, was actually launched by the police in order to track down network administrators when they opened new mirror domains to keep it operational. Others say that the police came to the network tracking the data of vendors in another online store, Nemesis, dismantled in May. And yeah, this kind of falls in line with another theory that I heard from doing Fed Time, Sam Bent. He had an interview with Hugbunter where there's something with these Tor DDoS attacks where there's some metadata that's being leaked as part of it, as part of this. And it's possible that that is the foot in the door that law enforcement is using to capture these darknet market administrators. I have to do some more research on that as well, but this could just be an exploit that only law enforcement is aware of until we figure it out. Interesting nonetheless, though. CoinMarketCap had a severe vulnerability that occurred on their website where people were actually getting their wallets drained. Apparently, a doodle image that was displayed on their homepage contained a link that triggered malicious code through an API call, resulting in an unexpected pop-up. And apparently it was asking for wallet addresses and some people may have had their funds stolen. But this was a wallet draining pop-up. So, I mean, I'm assuming some people actually fell for this, but like, yeah, never just like, but like, yeah, never trust anything wallet related on the internet unless you're sending someone, you know, cryptocurrency. Yeah, it's unclear if anyone actually lost any funds, but yeah, that's a pretty major exploit there. Graphene OS, they posted a Twitter thread about the future of their product. I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'm like kind of tired right now, to be honest with you guys, but basically they said that they're not going anywhere and, you know, and quote, we've made it clear we're shipping Android 16 soon and that the support devices will remain supported. So they're still kind of doing their thing. They're still doing research. It's not over yet, guys. So Graphene is still here, but do donate to them if you want to help support them and their search for, you know, more devices. Last news story here before we get to the closing monologue. There's this news story where apparently there were 16 billion passwords that got leaked and like it got picked up by all these different, you know, sites. And, yeah, it turns out that this was just, like an AI written article that was just like not true. And, when I first saw the news, I actually went to, Bleeping Computer, because that's really where I get my like leak news or like ransomware news. I always go to Bleeping Computer to confirm because they're pretty reputable. And they didn't have an article about it. So I was like scratching my head, like, what the hell is this? And yeah, come to find out that basically this was just like repackaged leaks from the past. And it looks like that the claims originated from a cyber news article that doesn't list any sources and which appear to be AI written quotes. So this is basically AI fear mongering. I guess it's good because it kind of reminds people to, you know, use a password manager, update your passwords and stuff. But yeah, it was fake news, actually. Go figure. So yeah, to wrap things up though, we're going to talk about the Genius Act. It passed this week. Genius Act, being the stablecoin, the major stablecoin bill pushed by Looney Lummis and company. And yeah, this is really the goal of government for cryptocurrency. They really wanted to pass this, and they did. And it's going to bring a lot of interesting things to the table, a lot of regulation, a lot of tracing. And this is a pretty big deal. And I think what you're going to start to see is a lot of these underground laundering, illegal laundering, like websites, or maybe not websites, but like laundering that's happening, like say in Mexico with the cartels or whatever. A lot of these are going to start to get censored and whatnot, because these stablecoin companies will be obligated to do that. So it'll be interesting to see the fallout from this. We're already also seeing a lot of companies announce their own stablecoins, and you know, I'm sure there's going to be a lot more development on that. But you know, the one thing I wanted to point out though is, you know, if you really transport yourself back to January, remember how that was like though, when it seemed like every week, whenever Trump would announce like a speech, an impromptu speech, everyone was like, "Oh shit, they're going to talk about the strategic reserve." Remember that? Remember those times? What happened? Right? Yeah, it was like every week there would be like, "Oh, this is it, guys," you know, and nothing happened. It's really funny how quickly things can change in that regard. All I'm going to say is the Moon Boys, they're pretty quiet right now. And I like that. I like that. But whether or not this will actually lead to, you know, a major price dump, who the hell knows, right? That's not the point of the show. Point of this show is to kind of walk through things with a look at cryptocurrency as a tool, right? So anyways, that's the episode. Hope you guys liked it. Antimoonboy.com, xmrchat.com/Xenu for super chats. I'm out, guys. Have a good one.